Good Monday, Nashville. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. A beautiful day here in America's Music City. Ryan, what's up?
Nothing much. Had a pretty good weekend. Could have been better for obvious reasons, but had a good weekend. Hit the golf course yesterday. Have a really nice sunburn on my arms, so got that going on. My arms are burning this morning, but otherwise all good. How about you?
That's the burn of success. That's what that is. Burn of success on the golf course.
I wouldn't call it a success yesterday necessarily. I did have a birdie on a par three, so that was nice, but I lost more golf balls than I had birdies, so that's never a good thing.
That happens. Yeah, it was good. Celebrated a couple of friends' birthdays, so that was nice. Obviously, you know, just to jump right into it, could have been better for many reasons. I mean, these are the times in our country that just it stinks. It hurts. But, you know, you want everybody to be able to express themselves, but there's a different way to go about it. And I hate seeing our city hurt. And our city has been through so much lately. Our country has been through so much lately. That you don't want to see more pain. And watching Twitter and TV the other night of Broadway and the damage, it hurts my heart because you know, you're a Nashvilleian. You weren't born here, but you've lived here basically your whole life.
I claim Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely claim Nashville for sure. You know, I was born here almost 33 years ago, at the end of this month, and this is all I've ever known. I went to college in Murfreesboro, so 45 minutes away-ish, and Nashville has always been my home. And, you know, whether I continue to live here my entire life, it will always be my home. And my heart was hurting Saturday night because those of you that know me on a personal level know that I am I just want to love everybody. I want to give you a hug. Like, social distancing has sucked for me because I can't do that. Like, I'm like Jason Fitz. Like, I just come here, bring it in. I can look at somebody and go, you're having a bad day. Give me a hug. Let me make it better. And I know that it doesn't always work that way. You can't just snap your fingers and everything is wonderful again. But there is definitely a way to go about doing it, and that's what we need to figure out. And burning down Broadway ain't it. And so
the courthouse or anything.
Let's avoid fire. Fire is not the way to do it. There needs to be dialogue. There needs to be an understanding. And you know, this is coming from somebody that my best friend is black. My other best friend is a white cop, and there's got to be a way to bring everybody together. And I don't want to see any more suffering, because suffering doesn't do anything. And love everybody is my message today. And I don't want to see what happened, not only in our city, it's you know, obviously we're in Nashville, we're broadcasting in Nashville, but you know, what's going on around our country, let's come together and grab the hand of the person well, maybe not grab the hand right now, 6 feet apart, but you know what I mean. And let's just work on this together. That's my message. It's all about love. I love all of y'all here in Nashville. That's why, you know, I open every show and say, good morning, Nashville, because this is who I'm talking to. And it's you can't see me, but you can hear me, and I know all of you are out there too. So that's my message today, trying to keep it light, trying to you know, just say love everybody, give everybody the virtual hug as we continue to try and fight the coronavirus and then everything else going on in this world of ours.
Well, well said, Chase. I mean, you know, many protests around the country over the weekend were peaceful and were moving, but not every one of the protests were like that. And the ones that weren't were the ones that got the most attention on TV and social media, including what happened Saturday night at the courthouse here in Nashville, and then following down on Broadway. And, you know, it sucked seeing all that. You know, there was a there was a thought in mind while seeing all that was, man, what if this was a normal Saturday night on Broadway, you know, with the bars overflowing and lines outside and a lot of people down there. It could have been a whole lot worse than just a lot of broken windows and graffiti. And obviously the courthouse being lit on fire was awful to see, but it could have been worse if downtown Nashville was a normal Saturday night pre-COVID. So I'm glad they caught the individual that was seen in a lot of the photos that was setting fire to the courthouse. And there are still vandals out there from, you know, spray painting the Music City Center and also contributing to that fire that Metro Nashville PD is looking for. So you can go to their Twitter account at Metro Nashville PD or MNPD, excuse me, on Twitter. And you can go there and help them on their Twitter to see if you can help identify or find those vandals. So
yeah, we need to do our part. And it's just that's I understand, you know, because look, it's not easy, you know, to even think about how to talk about this, like how to start a show. Whereas, you know, we're a sports station, so we want you to feel like you can come here and we're going to talk sports as sports try to come back. I mean, it's already been difficult of, okay, because sports are not around. But at the same time, you know, I'm a Nashvillian. I'm a person, you know, and so I want you to feel that, because my whole personality, you know, everybody asks, what's your on-air voice? You know, what's your on-air personality? I'm the fan. I'm a fan first. I've always been a fan. I'm not going to hide that. You know, I had a conversation one time with Sean Henry, and he said, that's what I love about you, because you let your fandom come out and people relate to that. And so I'm trying to do that here, because I'm a fan of Nashville. I'm a fan of people. I pull for people. You know, I'm constantly trying to not only make myself better, but make everybody around me better. And, you know, Marquise knows, you know, he was with me Saturday night, because you bring up Broadway. Chances are, like, to celebrate Ricky's birthday and another friend of ours, Allie, we probably would have been out on Broadway in normal circumstances. That's what we would have done. But, you know, we had a little house gathering and, you know, continued to fight the good fight with social distancing and the other thing, you know, going on with coronavirus. So we weren't out, but so that hit, when you brought that up, I mean, that hit close to home to me too. When I started hearing about things, I was like, man, we could be out right now. Like, this is crazy. And I mean, you and I, you know, same thing. Like, we've had some Nashville nights, but there's just a better way to go about it. And I hope that, and I feel that a majority of people realize that, and they know that this is a conversation that is ongoing. And I hate that it's still a conversation in 2020, but it is. And it's just one of those things that everybody has to listen to the other side and be willing to listen to each of the sides. And hopefully it's something that can be worked out. But just wanted to kind of start things off. And Marquise, you know, if you have something you'd like to add, then you certainly have that platform to do so. Here on the show. But you know, we like to be lighthearted and talk about sports, but every now and then you got to talk about what's real and what's going on in the world.
Now I'll let Derek Mason speak for her.
Yeah, let's hear from Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason. That was on, good segue, Marquise, he was on ESPN radio this weekend and gave his thoughts on what's happening in our country, what's happening in our world, and more specifically his reaction to the Nashville protests and his safe at home story.
Everybody across the country is experiencing, you know, waves of emotion, you know, right now. And, you know, I think Killer Mike said it the best, you know, the other night when I was listening to, you know, him speak in Atlanta, you know, and him just talking about, you know, man, where we are now. I mean, we've got to stop, and we've got to pay attention to what's really going on, and we've got to, you know, address the issues for what they are, and not turn on ourselves, man, because there's enough things going on right now, you know, with us looking at, you know, man, videos and seeing what's happening, you know, with people, and understanding that, you know what, this isn't right, You know, I mean, I'll share a story with you, Peter and Katie. I mean, I was talking to my wife yesterday, and this is how, you know, I mean, it really hit home for me. My wife said, Derek, I'm looking at you, and I can remember your dad. My stepdad's an ex-military guy, but she said, when I first met you, he always had this lanyard around his neck, and he always had one for you. And he was on you all the time about wearing that lanyard around your neck. And here's why. He always wanted me to keep my driver's license and my registration around my neck. So if I ever got pulled over, okay, man, I would never have to reach, you know, for anything or reach in a glove compartment. And, you know, that's sort of what my conversation was about yesterday, just a little bit. It's like, okay, man, you grow up, you know, in this microcosm of okay, man, do these things and make it home safe. Okay, mm-hmm. And that's what I was always told. Do these things and you make it home safe. And, you know, even in doing these things, you know, man, what we saw, you know, with the death of you know, man, George Floyd was the idea, man, that he did things right and he didn't make it home safe. And that's scary. That's scary for a lot of parents. That's scary for, you know, young men in this country. So, man, we got to address these issues and we got to make sure we get it right.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason with Peter Burns and Katie George this weekend. Best week ever on ESPN Radio. And Ryan, you know, as we wrap this up, Coach Mason, I love talking to him, and I have the opportunity to do that every week during the football season because he has been gracious enough to do a weekly with that show since he's been here, and did a weekly with our morning show as well. He did two weeklies on our station, and he has done that consistently, and it's after a win, after a loss, after a good time, after a bad time. And that's what I love about Coach Mason is he's never going to step away, and he's always going to be honest. And that I really appreciate. And he was honest there. And I mean, he obviously sees things from different eyes. And just to listen to him, and he went on and he said, I'm a college football coach. I'm not a black head coach. And, you know, I love that, you know, because that's him, and he loves everyone. And just appreciate his honesty on ESPN Radio. And, again, somebody that you can hear on these airwaves quite a bit. So, go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, you brought up earlier this segment of, you know, the fact that this everything going on is bigger than sports and what we're going to segue into, you know, as the show goes along. And this weekend was yet another reason, at least for me personally, why I wish there were baseball games for us to watch this weekend, or a Stanley Cup final game or NBA finals game, because nothing in this country brings us together better than sports. And nothing divides this country more than politics. And, you know, really wish there were, you know, the normal sporting events, like the Stanley Cup final, the NBA finals and baseball games. And yes, there was a NASCAR race yesterday. But
damn,
really
right
wish,
there was.
Yes, there was. But wish, it was just yet another reason why I wish we weren't going through what we are going through with the world and with sports right now, because sports are an escape for a lot of people when it comes to things that are bigger than sports.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, and that sports bring everyone together, I think, is the best way to put it. But when we come back, let's talk about some sports potentially returning. There is another proposal by Major League Baseball. The players, I should say. The players have given their counterproposal. We'll dive into that, plus the NBA, here on The Rundown, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
It is a 114-game proposal by the Major League Baseball Players Association. Season would start on June 30th, end on October 31st. I think the most important point here, though, is not the size of the season, which is up for negotiation, but a caveat that they put in there about if there is no postseason this year, then they are willing to defer $100 million in salary for players making $10 million or more in the season.
Jeff Passan of ESPN about the latest proposal by the MLB Players Association about the return to play. Welcome back into The Rundown. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. So we knew that the players, Ryan, were going to come back with something at some point in time. They had been negotiating with the league. The biggest sticking point has been the money and been how much money the players were going to give up. And the pay cuts that they were going to take, even though they had already agreed to one pay cut when this all started. It was an 82-game proposal by the owners. The players are saying 114 to start on June 30th and end on October 31st. Now, let's start with that aspect of it, because I'm like, whoa, okay, that's asking a lot. You have a short amount of time to try and get all that in, and then postseason. That's a lofty goal. A lot of doubleheaders in there. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's basically from June 30th to October 31st is their proposal. And first of all, it's June 1st. So if that were to be the case, then I hope they have a deal yesterday to be able to start June 30th. I do not foresee much of this proposal following through with Major League Baseball and the owners. I just don't. 114 games is a whole lot of games to fit in a short amount of time. That's 4 months. Now, that's, I mean, when you look at a six-month season, you normally have, what, 25, about 25 games, 28 games maybe per month per team?
Yep.
So that is, I mean, that's pretty close to that average, but still, you're then risking not being able to get the postseason in if there's a second wave in November or December. And June 30th just seems way too soon for something like this, when we both know they're not going to come to an agreement today or tomorrow or Wednesday. This thing is probably going to still drag out as this week goes along, maybe even into next week, if they ever do come to an agreement. You know, there's obviously nothing in here when it comes to how they're paid. So
basically just the deferral part.
Correct. But that's only in the event of a canceled postseason.
Right.
So I think the thoughts in here are respectable from the Players Association's point of view, and the fact that they want to get in 114 games. But shoot, that's, what, 32 more games than what the owners had been striving for?
Yeah.
So maybe the middle ground is somewhere close to 100, and you could maybe start around July 4th, go through October, then the postseason happens in November. I know they wanted the players wanted an expanded postseason to go from 10 to 14 teams to, you know, increase revenues for the league. I think that could be an inevitability.
And I get the feeling that everybody's pretty much cool with that. That if the postseason expands, like I was even seeing last night when Jeff Passan was on SportsCenter, he was saying that they were talking about for this year and potentially next year to help with some of the revenue to expand the postseason to make up for some of that. So I think they're good with that.
Yeah, and we've brought that up with the NHL.
Sure,
we brought it up as it pertained to the NHL back before the NHL put out their return to play format, which was, you know, we had the discussion of what from an expanded or what from a format in the NHL could be carried into, you know, following seasons. And we both agreed that an expanded postseason could make sense, because if you include 20 postseason teams in the NHL, then you would be expanding the revenue, which right now these leagues need to recapture all the revenue they can for just the overall health of these leagues moving forward.
Yeah, so some other bullet points. Expanded playoffs for 2 years. The MLB's proposal suggests 1 year of a postseason that goes from 10 to 14, so that's what we're talking about with that. A salary advance of $100 million to split among the players during the so-called spring training 2.0 that leads up to the regular season. Additional commitment to players wearing microphones on the field and other broadcast enhancements. I get that, because you're not going to have fans. An offer to hold events such as an off-season All-Star Game or home run Derby to generate additional revenue. So that's coming from the players. ESPN's Jeff Passan, though, did say that the owners will most likely reject this plan.
MLB is going to reject this proposal. Right. It's just an inevitability, like it was inevitable that the players rejected MLB's proposal on Tuesday that included the pretty drastic pay cuts for players up and down. But the issue is going to be on the owner side. Now, there is a group of owners. It's a small group at this point, but there's a group that has been fairly vocal about there not being a 2020 season and what the benefits would be to that. And the question is this proposal going to give them more ammunition, perhaps, going forward and being able to bring some others onto their side? Or are they going to see this from the players as an olive branch saying, hey, let's find somewhere to meet in the middle?
I feel, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Ryan, I actually feel like there is an olive branch here somewhere. Now, there are some things where the owners are going to go, yeah, okay. Like the and it's money. It's always with money. But I do feel like the players have given this proposal knowing that the owners aren't going to take it, but they might find that middle ground, and they're willing to talk, and they have to be. I mean, it's this goes back to everything that we've discussed of if they don't get this done and they don't get it done soon because they're bickering over money, it's a black eye for baseball and the players, and it's going to be one that's going to be very hard to recover from. And so I think that the players are realizing that with this proposal. Now, to me, 114 games, I think that's too much. 82 might be too little. So what you just brought up of 100, that seems like an easy proposal. The players are trying to present as much as possible because those are that's revenue. That's revenue that can come in. And so I understand that. But I just feel like that maybe now this week, and this week would be good considering they want to start June 30th and the owners wanted to start July 4th. They got to get it done this week, but hopefully there is some sort of middle ground.
Yeah, and when you look at the different divisions that could be realigned through this, that the reported West, Central, and East, three 10-team divisions, believe that's still on the table for a return. If you take the nine divisional opponents, when looking at a schedule, you have nine divisional opponents. If you play them, say, 10 to 11 times each, throughout the season, then you're looking somewhere in the 90 to 100 game range, which I think is realistic if you can start around July 4th. The later the longer this thing drags out, the shorter the season it's going to be. So it's incredibly vital here this week, hopefully not into next week, but maybe even into next week, for Major League Baseball to come to an agreement, because it is going to be a huge black eye for that league if the players and owners can't come to some sort of agreement through all this. And, you know, we've been harping on the fact that the owners have been the ones coming to the Players Association with the different proposals, and it's nice to see the players coming back with their own proposal. This clearly shows me that they are absolutely wanting to play, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to money, and I'm still not confident that we're going to be sitting here a week from now saying that there's going to be a 2020 MLB season.
Yeah, I'm not either, but I mean, it's going to take one side giving in somewhere to get this going, and
it's probably
going to
take both sides to give in somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's a compromise. Both sides give up something to find the, you know, the middle ground, but which side's going to do it first? And usually in things like this, as it goes on, you go, all right, players are probably about to give in, or the owners are going to concede on something. Like you can figure it out. I have no idea. I can't tell you one way or another. I think that there's an olive branch. There's a little bit of an olive branch coming from the players, but I'm not saying that because they're about to give in. Because they're with the money, they're like, nah, we're done taking pay cuts. I mean, they've all said that they're done taking pay cuts. So, you know, that's going to be the holdup. That's because I don't know if the owners are going to just back down on that. They're looking at it. We're losing money. Everybody's got to lose money. And I will continue to go back to what Tom Glavine said a few weeks ago, that if you're a player and you've now missed 2 months of the season, you can't really sit there and expect to get paid for the full season. You just can't. But at the same time, you don't want it to affect you later on down the road. You don't want the owners to use this as an opportunity to bring in a revenue split and a salary cap and all that stuff. So that's the fine line. And I understand all that, but it also it goes back to the optics that we continue to harp on, because you can't have the public display being fighting over money, millionaires and billionaires fighting over money. Just can't have that. And unfortunately, that's just kind of where they are. So which side gives in first is the big question. And I don't think we really know the answer to that, but at least there has been a counter proposal. Now on with another sport, we know the NHL came out with their proposal last week that the players have agreed to. And so there is hope that their season is going to begin, but we still don't have dates. Now, where does the NBA stand on things? We'll discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Stop by and eat with us, partner, to eat, dine in, or carry out, and get a sticker from the restaurant and add it to your card. Take a picture and post it on Twitter using the hashtag #EatWithUs and tag us at 102.5 The Game, the Preds, at Preds NHL, and the restaurant. Secure 8 stickers, receive a Preds prize pack, secure all 16 stickers, and receive a Preds player autographed puck. To see participating restaurants and to print out the card, just visit thegamenashville.com. Eat with us. Cool campaign that we're doing here with the Predators as well. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. So a lot of proposals, Ryan, coming out. Maybe some marriage proposals. I don't know. None that I have to worry about. But no, not even close to that. But the NBA, the NHL, MLB, hopefully close to returning. Now, the NBA hasn't really – I mean, these are all coming out. You know, Woj and Brian Windhorst, other sources, they are reporting on these. But there hasn't really been an NBA-endorsed plan, just a lot of different ideas that have been circulating around. Bringing all 30 teams back, resuming the season, going to 72 games, that's been one. But now sources, according to ESPN, are saying that's probably not a legitimate consideration anymore. The one that I think most people have looked at and go, okay, that makes the most sense, is 22 teams coming back. There's been a 20-team plan as well, but the 22-team plan would this is from ESPN.com. The 22-team plan would include teams that are currently within 6 games of the final playoff spots in each conference. Sources said New Orleans, Phoenix, Portland, Sacramento, and San Antonio would land in Orlando, Disney World, which is where they're probably going to play all these, under those guidelines, with Washington joining as the only team within 6 games of the 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. So it's not even split, you know, East-West, but what do you think about some of the things that have been floating out there when it pertains to the NBA?
Well, I am interested to see the differences between the NHL's return to play plan and what is being proposed in the NBA, because it sounds like the NBA, like you said, 20, maybe even 22 teams will come back, and they will deem them as regular season games. And then possibly basically a tournament to decide a champion. And it sounds like Thursday is going to be the day that all of this gets voted on by the Board of Governors in the NBA. So Thursday sounds like the day that we'll get a lot more news as it pertains to the NBA. And I do wonder how much of the league's effort to come back with more teams includes them wanting to include someone like Zion Williamson, where they can put Zion on TV and, you know, continue to showcase his talents along with all the other stars in the NBA. But New Orleans currently not in the playoff field. But if you expand the standings and you continue the regular season in some form, then they are currently in 10th in the Western Conference. So that could be an incentive by the NBA to do that. I could be overthinking it, but that was one of the first things that came to mind was, well, if you expand it, then you're getting Zion on TV more, which is only good for the NBA.
Well, the last paragraph in this article says, or last sentence, really, the NBA and NBAPA are also mindful of generating revenue on the resumption of the season, and playing regular season and play-in games will generate more money than simply restarting the season with playoff games at the ESPN Wild World of Sports Complex, which is where they're at Disney World or in Orlando. That's where they want to play. So I get that. And this is what stands out to me with all of this. The NHL and the NHL players, while they don't agree on everything, and there have been fights or not fights, but discussions, heated discussions at times, they're looking at this of, we know what's at stake here. We need to get back. We need to do as much as possible to make up. I mean, we're all going to operate at a loss, but to make up as much money as possible. We know we're not going to have fans. So let's just find the best course of action for this that's going to help everybody and not hurt us way on down the road. I feel like the NHL and the NHLPA, they're doing that. I feel like the NBA and the NBAPA, at least it would appear, are thinking in that realm the same way. It's been the baseball that, you know, there's the hiccup and the disconnect. So with these proposals with the NBA, it feels along the lines of what the NHL has done. They know they have to get back. They're just trying to figure out the best way to do it. And, you know, we've had conversations, Ryan, and I've used the analogy of, you know, there are multiple ways to get to one point. It's just finding the best way. And I feel like that's what the NBA and the NBA Players Association are doing right now, that they know they both want to get to the same location, but what's the best route to take?
Well, and from a competitive standpoint, when you look at just the standings and on the court, I think there's less of a need for the NBA to expand to, say, 24 than the NHL felt, because the standings were pretty tight in the National Hockey League, where in the NBA – you could probably go under the assumption that the 16 teams that were in playoff positioning at the time of the season pause were probably going to make the playoffs. I mean, the only question was really Memphis down the road. But even them, the 3.5 games ahead of Portland and New Orleans in the Western Conference, Portland and New Orleans both 8 games under .500. And then that brings in the question that a lot of people, including the two of us, brought up with Montreal and Chicago in the NHL, saying, why do they even deserve an opportunity to play for the Stanley Cup when it didn't really feel like they were in the playoff picture at the time of the season pause? But from the NHL's standpoint, bringing Montreal and Chicago back into the fold brings two original six franchises onto their television. And from the NBA standpoint, you know, bringing Zion Williamson back into the fold for the rest of this season, I think is something that has definitely been on their mind. And also just the sheer fact that you're gaining revenue by having more games. And that was obviously a big thing for the NHL as well, not to just bring back 16 teams for the postseason, but you create something unique, something that's different, something that is going to result in more games on TV, which means more money for the league. And I think if the NBA goes about that, you know, I think revenue is the biggest reason why these two leagues that we're discussing are thinking of expanding from just the 16-team format that we're used to.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, too, kind of bringing up what you were pointing out, like with the NHL and wanting to, you know, be in Chicago or be in New York or Montreal and these big TV markets, and then what you just said about some of the players in the NBA, I think that's a beautiful strategy. I mean, I have no problem with that way of thinking, because you gotta try and get something. And I'll ask you this, because you've been a hockey fan basically your whole life. I have been, you know, the last 12, 15 years, something like that. But I feel like that any hockey fan, if you're just a diehard, true love hockey, you have your team, but you're still going to watch, especially now that you haven't had it for so long and you haven't had sports. You're hungry that you're going to tune in. And so why not have some of those big markets that do have their teams? That's an extra incentive. And then the hope is that you're going to keep people tuning in those markets and then all other markets to get television ratings and help with some of the revenue from the advertising and everything involved in that. So I think it's a good plan.
Well, you know me, I'm a sucker for playoff hockey. Like,
right. Even if the Preds aren't in it, I think you're going to watch.
Totally. I mean, there was I think it was game six between the Bruins and Blues last year, where I'm sitting at home and our power goes out for whatever reason, and the Stanley Cup could be won that night. And I'm like, I am not missing this. So I drive to a local restaurant that had the game on and watch the game there. A few years ago, I had an opportunity to go to CMA Fest and said, no, absolutely not. The Stanley Cup could be won tonight. And sure enough, the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the San Jose Sharks that night. I am a sucker for playoff hockey. If I'm not doing something that is more important to my family or my group of friends, then I am watching whatever playoff hockey game is on TV at that moment.
The only time that I really haven't is a few years ago when the Predators got beat in seven games against Winnipeg. That was my first playoff, going on the road. And so I was so mentally just fried after that series that I barely watched the conference final games. I would check them out, but I was just so mentally done. But then the cup final, I jumped in. I was back. But it was just I had to rest my brain and take a break after that series. But I feel like most people diehard fans like you are will tune in, and that goes for the NBA. I mean, Marquise, I know you're a Lakers fan. Obviously, you want to see LeBron and the Lakers win it all, make a deep run. But I feel like that you're such a fan of the NBA that you're going to watch no matter what.
No, I watch regardless. Like, even when the Lakers were not in the playoffs at all, in that last stint, I was still watching the NBA playoffs. Now, it's going to be, especially for newer fans, it's going to be kind of weird watching like a team like the Wizards play, because quite frankly, the Wizards were just awful this year and don't need to be in the playoffs. But I mean, to see Zion, to see John Moran in the playoffs, possibly even matching up in the playoffs, and that story, and there's a lot of intriguing matchups in there. So I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to be honed in on it. And it's July basketball, which around this time I usually, have to watch the
Summer League.
Yeah, I'm watching Summer League. I am watching Summer League in Orlando. I'm watching Summer League basketball in Orlando, but now it gets pushed back to like September. So I still get
Fall League basketball.
Yeah, Fall League basketball. So it's all good. But no, it's sports in July, and usually around this time it's kind of a dead period to where I'm just watching the Dodgers sometimes disappoint me, sometimes make me happy. So it's I'm gonna watch it regardless. I don't care who's in it. The finals can be the Wizards versus the Suns, and I would still watch it. That's how much I want basketball.
Well, what's going to be interesting when you hear of the NBA's hope to house all of these games in Orlando at the Disney complex, I wonder how different it's going to feel watching those games from the Disney Wide World of Sports complex, even without fans there, as opposed to, say, the NHL in an empty NHL arena, as opposed to a smaller scale arena. Because with the broadcast views, it can still feel somewhat normal in an NHL arena, even if there aren't fans. But I'm going to be honest, I've never watched a basketball game, I don't think I have, from the Disney Wide World of Sports complex, and whether or not it feels like they're going to be playing in a high school gym.
Well, see, and this is not me throwing a shot at Summer League, because I love Summer League. There's no fans in Summer League, barely. Like, sure. There's just nobody there watching. Like, you hear coaches, you can hear players. Like,
but aren't those games played in Vegas and some games played some of the bigger arenas?
One is in Orlando. One is in Vegas, and that's kind of like the big showcase where they actually crown like a Summer League champion. But they have like the first stint of, games there. They have it at I think it's the Orlando Magic's practice facility. And that's where they have it there in Orlando. And there's like a few people in there, but it's kind of like watching it without fans, because it's just like there's nobody like really cheering for the Summer League players except me. So it's just media and then coaches, and there may be like a few like people sprinkled around. Maybe instead of like maybe incorporate kind of like how the NCAA tournament is, to where in the Final Four you have like the two teams that are going to play next kind of in their warm-up suits and they're kind of watching. Maybe you have that for basketball or for hockey for that matter, just to kind of get some kind of fan atmosphere in it, and maybe they do it that way. I don't know, but I mean, all you're going to hear is a basketball hitting the court and then coaches yelling. And Greg Popovich not talking. So that's about it.
I love it.
Did y'all see the story of John Madden coming out and saying that he does not want to see football games with piped-in crowd noise?
No, but I mean, that makes sense. I don't either. I mean, we've talked about that.
Yeah.
I don't really want to see that. So just play without fans.
It's a huge storyline.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but it hasn't – I thought about this yesterday. Like, it was more noticeable at Bristol without fans because it's such a small racetrack. So a lot of the camera angles, you can tell that there aren't fans than Charlotte or Darlington. And it was also in the day, so that made a difference. But it still hasn't bugged me that much. I miss the fans, and I wish I was at the racetrack. But at the same time, it's not really taken away from the viewing experience that I have had.
Do you think it would, like, from the NBA standpoint and what Marquise just described with what it could be where they're playing NBA playoff games in basically practice facilities?
Yeah.
To me, that would feel even more weird than playing in an empty arena. Like, in the empty arena, you at least have the wide shot. You at least, have a lot of that space where it feels normal. If all these teams are kind of squished, you know, on the court and on the sidelines, and you've got these quasi practice facilities housing playoff games, I feel like, you know, you would have different camera angles and you'd have more of a bird's eye view like you do during some of the summer league games. I don't know. It would feel even more weird to me if that's the way the NBA went.
And it probably – see, that's the thing I've been waiting to see of what am I going to notice with the NHL and the NBA? Like, am I going to notice it then? Because, like, WWE, that I love wrestling, like, that's been the one where it's been weird. Like, because it's just, like, the crowd
is so
important.
Because you have to
play
off the crowd. That's the whole point of wrestling is just to play off the fans. And if you have no fans, and then even if you pipe in, like, wrestlers in the stands, like, it's still not the same as, you know, having actual fans there. So – And that plays off of that. So other sports can, you know, UFC's playing in arenas, but their camera angles are so zoomed into the octagon that you don't even notice that there's not fans in attendance.
Yep.
So I think that's what NHL is going to have to do. That's what the NBA is going to do. Maybe tight camera work. I don't know, but that's probably going to have how they're going to have to do it.
Make it for television. That's what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, unfortunately.
When we come back, he's a Hall of Famer. But who am I talking about and which Hall of Fame am I talking about? We will discuss next here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's toast the heroes in our community. Submit your local hero today. Just send us a text at 615-737-1025. Connect with us on social media or visit thegamenashville.com and tell us about your heroes. Then join Jared and Floyd at 4 o'clock each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes. Thank you for your sacrifice. You're the definition of true royalty. Cheers, Crown Royal. Must be 21 years or older to toast. Please drink responsibly. Hey, yo, welcome back into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Chase. He's Ryan Marquise back at the Wholesale Link Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So I said, Ryan, he's a Hall of Famer. So who am I talking about? Who could Chase be bringing up as a Hall of Famer? Well, I think Lance Armstrong is a Hall of Famer in the Lying Hall of Fame. This guy, watching his 30 for 30, like I couldn't turn away because my whole thought process the entire time was, this guy is excellent at lying. Like he can spin it, and that's what he did basically his whole career. But it also raised a legitimate question because you and I were texting about this, and I had to record it, but I watched it, and well done. Another fantastic 30 for 30 by ESPN. But the question that came to my mind was, in the end of it all, is Lance Armstrong a good guy that did bad things, or is he a bad guy that did good things? That's the question for me. What are your thoughts?
Well, he came across as the latter, that he's a bad dude that ended up doing some good things, not only in racing when it came to the competitiveness, but also the fact that he you know, built this the Live Strong campaign, and you know, through that documentary, he came across to me like Scottie Pippen came across in The Last mm-hmm. Dance of, you know I did some things wrong, but I wouldn't change it. It's like,
and he kept saying that. He said that multiple times in the documentary of, you know, and he even said, like, I keep saying this, I keep telling you, like, I wouldn't change anything.
And I, whenever he said that, I just did a double take. I'm like, oh, well, clearly you didn't learn from all the mistakes you made through all this. If you're just going to sit there and say, I wouldn't change anything.
Well, maybe he did and he didn't care. That's the thing. I mean,
and then that gets to your point of him being a bad dude.
Right. I think he's a bad guy that did good things. Because he came off, when I got done watching that, and that's why I led this off, saying he's in the Lion Hall of Fame, like, he's a jerk. He's full of himself. Like, he's still full of himself. And mm-hmm. everything he did was for him. I mean, and that's it. Like, he didn't care about... Now, yes, his foundation did a lot of good things. Completely agree. But now it's like I look at it and go, oh, yeah, it just made him look good.
Sure.
Because he knew he was doing something bad.
Well, and... The way he talked to the producer at times, too, within the documentary, it's like, damn, dude.
Yeah, nothing came off sincere with him. And how he stabbed everybody in the back. And like, the part about Sheryl Crow and, you know, looking back on it, dating somebody famous and just how difficult that was. I'm like, what? No, you love that. You love the spotlight. Like, no... What I'm about to say, I don't mean to be mean or anything, but did people really care as much about cycling? I know there's a select few that like the Tour de France, and the Tour de France is a big deal. I understand a lot of prestige, but he brought cycling mainstream, in my opinion. Agree?
I think a lot of people paid more attention to the cycling world because of him.
Yes. But now it looks like the home run race, which we're going to get a 30 for 30 on that with McGuire and Sosa. It's like, oh, you loved it then. And it brought baseball out of the damage that was done from the strike. But then you find out that it was tainted. This is the same thing. And it's like, he was a hero and you loved him. And you know, everybody had the Live Strong bracelets and, but then you find out that it was all tainted. And then now this doesn't help those feelings. I mean, now it's just like he's proud of it. He's proud of what he did. That's kind of what stood out.
And as he said in the documentary, he wouldn't change anything. And I agree with you. I thought it was well done. I thought it was good, not great. Just I don't know. It felt a little incomplete. You know, the way it ended, I don't know. Floyd Landis, that part was probably the most interesting part of the whole documentary, is the fact that Lance and his team said no to Floyd Landis, and that's why Floyd Landis then
they
sent
hung
all those
him
emails
out to dry.
Yeah. And obviously through all these documentaries that ESPN puts out in their 30 for 30 series, you learn things that you didn't know beforehand. And mm-hmm. you know, the fact that Lance and his team said no to Floyd Landis, I did not know that, and that being the reason why Floyd Landis threw Lance under the bus. So I agree with you. Lance Armstrong is one of the most pathetic liars in sports history, and it's really sad that it did go down like that because of all the good that he did before it came out that he was just a bold-faced liar.
Yeah, and that's just what sucks. Is, you know, when you find that out, when you find out the truth, and the truth is just ugly.
Like,
and
when you see one of the Live Strong bands, you want to think of something good out mm-hmm. of that there's something positive.
Them.
Yeah. But now when you look at one of those wristbands, you're like, huh, well, you know, Lance is a liar. Like, that's the first thought of a lot of people when you see that band now, and that sucks.
It sucks because the organization, the foundation, did a lot of good.
Yes.
I mean, the foundation did a lot of good, but it's just he's tainted it, and he doesn't seem to care that he's tainted it. I mean, that's just how he came off. So, and to your point of that it was good, not great, I felt that way too, but I also said, well, look what it just followed up. So, you know, I think that that's a part of it for me that, you know, I'm I was so amped up about the 10-part series that we just watched over the course of the past 5 weeks that it left me wanting more. But I thought it was good, and I'm excited for B. Water, Bruce Lee is coming up this week, and then Sosa McGuire,
Long Gone Summer,
yeah, coming up in a couple weeks. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, there are only really a couple parts between parts one and two of Lance where I was captivated.
Sure.
So.
Well, there you go. If you missed it, check it out on ESPN On Demand. That's going to do it for today's edition of The Rundown. Stay safe out there. Love everybody. I'm going to continue to preach that because that's just how I feel. Hope you have a great day. Darren Donick and Chase next, ESPN 102.5 The Game.